Welcome to the CTOX podcast. This is the place to be if you're a technology leader navigating the fractional CTO landscape. I'm Marisa Brassfield, joined by Lior Weinstein, the visionary behind CTOX.
Here, we cut through the noise to deliver actionable insights for CTOs at every stage, whether you're looking at your first five-figure client or actively building systems to scale.
That's right. You'll learn principles, not just tactics, to transform your technical expertise into a thriving fractional practice. Let's dig in. Welcome back to the CTOX podcast. Leaving a full-time role doesn't erase your credibility. It reveals what you're capable of without the corporate wrapper. Today, we're tackling one of the biggest fears fractional leaders and new founders face. Does stepping away from a full-time job make you look less credible? We'll talk about why this fear shows up, what's actually true, and how to build stronger credibility in your next chapter than you ever had in your last. Lior, welcome. I am so excited about today's conversation.
Me too. This is probably one of the more common fears people have when they have never done consulting before coming into this role.
Yeah. So let's start at the 40,000 foot view. What do people really mean when they worry about losing credibility after leaving full-time work?
So the issue is that most people historically attach their title with how credible they are. But the reality is credibility doesn't come from your job title. It comes from your ability to create value. And that ability travels with you. They think that at this company, I got to be a director or a VP or a CTO. And if they can no longer command that title for Acme Inc., whatever the size of the company is, they think that people look at them as if they don't have credibility because now they're building some kind of a gap in their resume. But obviously we know it's not true and not the reality.
Why do you think this fear shows up even for very highly experienced executives and CTOs?
I think historically, the way most people are used to make money is you find a job. And when you find a job, the process generally goes through something like there's a job posting, or you heard about a job through the grapevine. And the process goes through something like talking to somebody in HR, maybe eventually like a hiring manager team. And the conversation, the substrate you use for the conversation is your resume, is your past. Because first of all, that's what HR knows how to do. HR is not specialized in our profession. They need to interview and onboard personnel across the positions in the company. So that's the only thing in common that they can use to understand what you did in the past. Most of them are obviously not professional enough to understand the nuances of everything, but that's how they try to gauge, you know, who are you relevant, and so on. That's why they would latch on specific keywords or specific parts of your experience and really try to match that against what they were told by the hiring manager actually looking for the role. And then when you go to the actual interviews with the team, the hiring manager, it's just how you start the conversation for most people. And because of that, they're used to thinking, oh, whatever is in that paper is going to make this interview successful. And if this interview is successful, I'm going to get the job and I'm going to get the salary I get and so on and so forth. But the reality is that resume is just a prompt. It's just a prompt for a conversation. And what they're really looking for is, do I like this person? First and foremost, right? Everybody just wants to work somebody they like. The next thing is, can they do the work and are they professional? So for that, the question, they're going to piggyback on maybe something in your resume, but really they want to understand your answers, right? It's not a history lesson. They don't care about the annals of your past. They care about right now, can you do the work? And in technology, it's even more pronounced, right? So they would try to ask you about something you've done recently. And if you're interviewing for leadership positions, they would ask you about your people skills, right? Tell me about challenging times. Tell me about successful times. To understand how you show up as a leader. And also the reference checks are going to be mostly on that, right? Nobody does reference checks on, do they actually know, you know, this little piece of technology that they were talking to you about? They want to gauge who you are as a person. When you shift outside of the job posting realm, you know, to get a job, then the resumes are just not an issue because that's not how the conversation starts. That's not how the conversation develops. That's not how the trust is built. Trust is built in a very similar way in the sense that they're trying to ask you something and you're trying to answer and build trust in real time. But the conversation topic is not the resume. So because most people certainly in the fractional CTO world. So this is somebody with a lot of experience. If you're used to making money with a job and don't have consulting background or something like that, that's how you were trained. You were trained that you have a resume, it's impressive, it prompts a conversation, through that conversation you build trust, and then you get a job. But the reality is that the fractional CTO route in the consulting realm, you build trust in a different way. And you know, when was the last time you hired somebody, let's say, for your house, right? Maybe a general contractor, and you were looking for their resume, right? Not very likely. At best, maybe, or at most, you would look for a portfolio, which is also something we talk about, right? Being able to talk about your wins, talk about your experience, but not a resume, not this delineation of how you spent your life in the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, nobody cares, sadly. Nobody cares. And we see this a lot at the accelerator where folks who are leaving a full-time job, but they have not yet stood up their fractional CTO business, there's this identity gap that happens. I'd love for you to speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, so the main context is, the first thing to think about, you're not losing credibility, you're losing a costume. Because that's how you show up through the interview realm and how you get a job, how you used to making money through the jobs. The identity gap creates this issue of, I'm used to being titled by someone. So a company, and usually, by the way, the person that gives you the title is not a kingmaker. It's not like a CTO gives you a CTO title, right? It's a non-CTO gives you a CTO title, or a non-professional gives you a professional title, because they think that's the role you need to fill in the company. So historically, if you're used to identifying yourself as your role, as your title, as your signature, as your LinkedIn byline, as your business card, and suddenly you don't have it, then they're a bit concerned. We actually have this pretty often in the program where somebody might come, let's say, like right now, there's a lot of these Amazon layoffs, right? So you might come as a director from Amazon, and you're actually, one of the questions that I get, I don't know if I can be a CTO. And I'm like, you have managed dozens of people, if not 100 people under you. How are you even questioning that? It's just the context of Amazon being such a large corporation. And of course, there's being a CTO at Amazon is very different than being a director at Amazon. But when you're servicing a technology-enabled business that might be 50 million in revenue, 100 million in revenue, 200 million in revenue, they don't need 100 engineers. They rarely need even 10 or 20, sometimes even 5. So of course you have the skills to figure out all of the technology challenges that that business might have. And in that context, you would be the chief technology officer, the best guy to make technology decisions for the business. Naturally, the CTO of HubSpot has a different skill set than the CTO of a 50-location chiropractor group, right? But both of them need technology decisioning and technology guidance. So going from a full-time role where somebody is basically king-making you and saying, you are now a director, you are now a VP, you are now a CTO, and now you need to basically title yourself so other people can understand what you can provide them in value, is a trick, because they need the confidence to be able to do it. This is part of the identity gap that comes in. The second thing is the understanding of the role, because usually in a job, somebody is creating a job posting and they're saying, hey, here's the list of responsibilities that we need. And you kind of self-identify and you say, oh yeah, I can do all of these things, ergo, I can do this job. But in our realm, in the fractional CTO, you're the one that's doing discovery and you need to interact with the prospect, figure out what they need, and then fit yourself into that, as opposed to, well, you need to convince them that you can do it and you need to help them articulate what are the actual responsibilities. So the other side is this proactive thing that until you talk to the business, you don't actually know what they need. You don't actually know what you're going to do. And for most CTOs coming into this realm, that's a little bit of a challenge just getting into it. It's very simple to do once you figure it out, but that's part of how they have a challenge calling themselves a CTO or technology or whatever it is, because they have to self-define it for their client and not rely on the client just giving them, you know, ready-made.
Yeah, and that imposter syndrome really comes in a lot. What are the other narratives that leaders tell themselves that kind of amplify the fear which may even prevent them from quitting the W-2 job in the first place?
Yeah, oh, there's a lot. I would say probably one of the common ones we get is, I was never titled as a CTO. But then when you look at the companies they worked with, they look at some major corporations, you're like, yeah, I mean, that corporation is huge and they have one CTO, right? Maybe they have a few field CTOs. So that's a very different thing than being, you know, the general of the US Army, and then being a commander, a platoon commander, which for whatever business you want to have, that's exactly what they need. Like for that business, you are effectively a general. You are leading all of the operations. So one is the gap of what titles the industry had given them in the past, and understand the difference between, if you have big corporate experience, most of the fractional CTO opportunity is going to be in the small to mid-sized business, right? It's a very different set of challenges. And of course, the titles are going to be very different. So historical titling is one. The other one is definitely very common for us. I don't know how to do marketing. I don't know how to do sale. I'm not a marketer. I'm not a salesperson. And that's by and large true for pretty much all technology leaders, certainly pretty much anybody that joins our program. And our mental model for it is a bit different. First of all, everybody does sales. When you get a job, you just sold yourself. When you're trying to push for a project, you're selling that project. But really our best mental model for sales is you making friends and building trust. It's not like a car sales, like, this is my product, go buy it, because it's you. You're building trust with yourself. So they have it in their mind that the mental model for a salesperson is something they see on TV or somebody slick or somebody like an advertising guy. And that's just not true. That's just not true. The other one is marketer. They think marketing is this super complicated, highly specialized. And of course, if you want to be a chief marketing officer, it is. But end of the day, marketing is creating awareness and going to the market, right? If we were in ancient Greece, we would literally just go down to the market and meet our people and let them know, I have cucumbers, right? So that's what the essence of marketing is. Also, in the context of a sole proprietor, which is what most of our fractional CTOs are outside of the ones that are building larger practices, your income goal is going to get satisfied. Most people try to hit that kind of $40,000 a month by 5, 6, 7 clients, right? 4 to 6 clients for the most part is going to get satisfied. So some people think, oh, there's the market, my demand in the market or the market demand or whatever it is too big, too small. Are there 4, 5, 6 clients that need you? And the answer is almost unequivocally yes in any single niche that you might think. So they're thinking this kind of big government level thinking, big consulting group thinking about the market opportunity where they're just trying to get a handful of clients. So that's another one, like them not understanding how to frame what marketing is and how to frame what their opportunity is. And they're latching on the things they read on the news or they read on whatever it is as general business strategy. But when you're a solo proprietor doing consulting, those things don't matter at all. So identity issue around sales, very common. Identity issue around marketing and the complexity of it. The reality is it's not very complex. People do it all the time. It's really just making sure people know what you have to offer and being in front of them. And then once you're in front of them, it's building enough trust to get a yes conversation, get another meeting until you can prove to them you can actually solve their problem, and then you exchange money. And lastly is just the approach of how complicated it is to create an alternative income source instead of a W-2, which again, for most people would be that $40,000 a month goal. I would say in the program ARISA, most people probably target 20 to 30 a month, right? Want to kind of replace their income, the full-time income. And it's also not that big of a deal. So they're using very abstract forms of what sales, marketing, market access income is. And because they don't go into the specifics, it just creates paralysis and they don't take action.
Yeah, and there's a couple of cognitive biases that also play into this and cause even more of a mess. And, you know, there's recency bias. Like, I've got to figure this out fast and land on my feet, or else I'm going to look like a fool for leaving, or whatever it actually sounds like. And you say a lot, the quote from our coach, Dan Sullivan, that entrepreneurs don't go crazy because of their goals, but because of their deadlines. And then we have loss aversion where, you know, oh man, it's going to take so much time and effort and energy to do these things I don't know how to do. Let me just stay in this corporate box.
Yeah. And, you know, anxiety, this fear, and we kind of say in the program that anxiety and hope are very similar energies, right? They're both this made up story about the future. Anxiety is a negative story, something you don't like, and hope is a positive story. Both of them are made up. And anxiety in many cases just come from not yet being in the game, in this new game. If you haven't taken action yet, you're judging the outcome before the story has even started, and then you're looped. That's why when people come in, we focus so much on bias to action and not go and watch all the videos and read all the content and attend all the meetings, because none of that, education is not going to get you clients. Education is that the things that you apply in skills once you engage with clients. But action will certainly get you clients. And really just trying to diffuse the anxiety that comes with new things. And W-2 is safe, job is safe, title is safe. Having, you know, a salary comes in every 2 weeks is very safe. So trying to get people outside of that and into their new future, that's also why when people come in with an income goal, the first one we hear is, I want to make 300 a year, 500 a year, right? And then in our sessions, we tell them, well, how much you want to make a month? Exactly because of that context that entrepreneurs don't go crazy because of their goals, but because of their deadlines. We want you to create a system that gets you that 30, 40, whatever it is every month. And does it really matter if you got to it in 2 months or 6 months or 10 months? It doesn't. Because once you have the system, you have it pretty much forever. Unlike a job, if you misnegotiate your starting salary, you're going to need to wait a while before any raise. But in a world where you're self-employed, you just need to figure out this metabolism of leads and money and fulfillment. And once you figure that out, you can just do more of it. And there's really no ceiling to it, right? We have a few people in the program making six figures a month, starting with zero. So it's really about nailing down that system and not trying to borrow concepts from the W-2 employment world, because it really just doesn't apply.
Yeah, that's a great one on borrowing the analogies, because sometimes they're very not helpful. What are some other signals that differentiate a crisis in credibility from a transition period?
The credibility crisis really comes from paralysis, right? Like you thinking that because my LinkedIn shows a gap, this is a problem. The reality is in the consulting world, nobody really cares about your CV because it's like a portfolio. They don't really care how long it took you to do different things. They just care if you have the capability or ability or not. And in the job world, the reason why people are afraid of it is because, again, a lot of HR managers look at a gap. And they look at that gap and they ask you, like, what happened there? But in the consulting world, you're just looking at abilities. You're not looking at time. So if you stopped one company, whatever it is, as long as you're still valuable, as long as you're still taking action, maybe you're doing GitHub projects, maybe you're doing research, maybe you're helping a nonprofit, doesn't matter. As long as you're doing things, as long as you're staying valuable, the credibility is still there and the transition period really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it is interesting to go from that explain this gap in employment, because it really does, it's a tell to an environment where, like, you need to be a better robot as a human corporate worker, whereas the entrepreneurial world is so different because it is based on value creation. The peaks and valleys are important, and we talk a lot about lifestyle in the CTOX Accelerator too. So it's like, oh, I took some time off to travel, to welcome and expand my family, to have a meaningful bonding period with my aging parents, or whatever the story is. These life experiences don't fit neatly on a resume. And no. That's part of the unlearning that we talk about a lot in the accelerators, like how you used to measure productivity and performance and success. Those same metrics will drive you insane as an entrepreneur.
And you don't need to, because going back to how you come about getting a client, you do it through discovery. You're actually the one asking the questions. So it's a very different position. Right, you're the one asking the questions. You're the one prompting them to understand what are they doing, why are they doing it, so you can figure out if you can help them get there, wherever there is. And that's a very different position than they're inviting you and are asking you questions about yourself because they're trying to understand if you're a fit to where they're trying to go. So just because of that flip, it's a non-issue and it really never comes up.
So for those who are listening and they're considering, you know, a bigger future, how do you build credibility quickly in a new fractional or entrepreneurial context?
So again, you don't keep credibility by staying employed. You keep it by staying valuable. And the way to do it is give value. Actually, one of the trainings we do in the accelerator, people ask us like, how much should I divulge in the first meeting or discovery? Should I, you know, give them the farm? And I'm like, absolutely. If you can give value in real time and it's going to take you 10 minutes, 30 minutes, that's what it's worth. It's all about execution. And right now you need to build trust through suddenly making something more real for them, more material. Like if you can pose a question that they've never thought about or an idea that makes a lot of sense, that's the best way. So listening, doing discovery, and we talk about this what and why conversation, not discovery. What are you trying to do? Why are you trying to do it? And as soon as they start talking, you're already adding insight. You're adding these spotlights of the problem. You're showing facets of the problem that they haven't thought about. Maybe you're suggesting a platform. Maybe you're suggesting a whole new way to do it. One of my favorite things, for example, is to make companies not do something. By far, my favorite thing is to get them to drop an idea. It's my favorite thing to do. It's obviously the most that shoots me in the foot, right? Especially if it's like a big project that they wanted to spend, you know, $500,000 on something. And it's a joyful moment for me to make them realize they shouldn't do it at all. They should spend like $5,000 and do something else entirely, because I built so much trust because I'm trying to think like them, which is really the key. When you're a fractional CTO, you're an entrepreneur that happens to be a CTO. And when you talk to a CEO, you are talking to an entrepreneur. So you want to be at their eye level. So you want to show them that you're thinking like them. And Elon Musk has this saying, right? The only worse thing than optimizing something that shouldn't exist. I'm paraphrasing, something like that. And that's what a smart entrepreneur would do. They would figure out, what is the problem I should tackle right now, this month, this week, this year, this quarter? So if you can be at their level and say, hey, how would I even do this? I would look at this problem entirely different. Or this is a great idea. You thought it might take you 9 months. I actually have an idea how we can MVP this in, you know, 6 weeks. So the more you can contribute value and share your insights in real time, the more credibility you build, and if you can manage to give insight that would actually suggest that they shouldn't hire you, that's a win-win. Maybe you lose the contract, but you win 100% of the trust. And if they need you in the future, they'll definitely call you and they'll refer you out. He'll talk to his friends, and if he hears someone that needs any kind of CTO services, they'll recommend you because they see that you're not just trying to say yes, yes, yes to everything that they have to do like consultants do, and try to get the contract no matter what.
Totally. And I'll plug your Forbes Business Council article that just came up at the end of December about iteration velocity and getting to the starting line fast and launching experiments. So it's neat to hear that come out in the conversations. And yeah, I mean, in a world where business is noisier and more complicated than ever, having someone at the executive level saying, we don't need to do this right now in this way, it can be faster, easier, better, cheaper. That's a gift. Yeah. It's a gift, and it's one that builds trust. So what signals can someone gather from the market to reinforce their direction? And let's say they're thinking about a fractional career.
There's a lot. First of all, if you're just thinking about it, I would recommend one of the things, you know, when people come into the program, we talk about this basic network activation. And one of our mental models is that everybody has a network. It's humans, you know. Like we've seen so many examples of somebody getting a client through the neighbor, through the PTA, through a men's retreat, like all these kind of random places. So I would engage with the market more than just read about the market, meaning ask the people that are closest to you, family, friends, neighbors, whatever it is, kind of tell them, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Do you have any advice for me? Right? Not do you know anyone that needs the service, but do you have any advice for me? And try to gather what insight and feedback you're getting. Same thing with former colleagues, former collaborators, employees, bosses, and so on. That's a big one, because very quickly you're going to get something. Yes, no. And as soon as you get any kind of a yes, that's a great thread to pull. The other one is certainly you can use open source intelligence kind of stuff. So you can use now Gemini research, ChatGPT research. We do see a rise in job posting as fractional CTOs, but here's one of the things we tell our CTOs in the program. If somebody has a job posting for a CTO, go ahead and pitch. Because maybe you can give them 100% of the outcome for a fraction of the price. And maybe they'll look, oh, you can actually do this for me and I don't have to pay the full-time salary. Now, this wouldn't be very true for pure software companies, you know, Series B, Series C. They probably need a lot of firepower. But again, most of the market is tech-enabled companies. It's not tech companies, meaning they don't make money by selling technology, but they have to leverage technology. So I would look at whatever markets that you're interested in and see what kind of posting activity they have, job activity they have, any kind of industry trends that are happening. Like we've seen cases where the government suddenly changes regulation and it has this downstream effect of companies that work with the government and then companies that work with companies that work with the government. So all these things that you can't not do, like something is affecting the market that they have to do it. We've seen it almost a couple of years ago with the big United hack. It impacted a lot of healthcare companies. Regulation changes in manufacturing, same thing. Even Walmart had this big change that triggered a lot of vendors, which is tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of vendors. So those are some more open source type of information that you can investigate if there is something. And of course, if you see any kind of technology leadership, I also like to look at like what kind of companies MSPs are reporting that they're servicing or software development agencies that they're servicing, because it means all of their clients are paying for technology one way or another. You just need to make sure that they're paying enough so it warrants a leader. Our metric for that, by the way, is if a business is spending, you know, $100,000 a year on technology, fractional CTO is probably not a great idea. Maybe purely as an advisor, like a small retainer, $3,000-$4,000, making some kind of course correction, some advice. If it's over 500,000 and certainly over a million, it's a complete waste of money not to have a talented leader that can actually guide the spend. And there's incredible amounts of businesses that spend that amount of money.
I love that you started with network activation, because I speak with a lot of our members after their first 10 network activation conversations. And something that is a very common and consistent pattern of feedback is that they went in kind of fearing the conversation and maybe what their peers would say. But instead, what they found was they felt rejuvenated and inspired and engaged, because the feedback that they heard was, you're going to be great at this. Oh, you'd be perfect at this. And there's an element of their sharing some of the gifts or skills or strengths that they observed when they worked together or how they knew each other. And so they get a little bit of confidence from the folks nearest to them, which is so important.
Sometimes we also get, like, if they're talking to former peers or colleagues, let me know how it goes, right? Because they're interested to see how you're venturing out, because they might want to do it themselves.
Yeah. And confidence is an interesting subject. How do you regain confidence when you no longer have a corporate identity to fall back on?
There's a lot of ways. I mean, we look at positive focus as an activity. David Goggins calls it the cookie jar, right? Alex Hormozi says, like, have a, you know, stack of undeniable proof, which is really all of them are saying the same thing, is being able to reflect on your past and actually see that you've done a lot of big things, a lot of really great things. You've done a lot of transformation. You've pretty much anyone pursuing this is looking at themselves as a problem solver. That's very generic, meaning you can solve any kind of problem, small problem, big problem, different industries, doesn't really matter. One of the first activities we have them do is do this experience inventory, right? This experience audit. Like, what stuff had you done? Not just what clients had you had. What stuff have you done? What problems have you solved? Because whatever problem you solve, there's any number of companies out there that had not solved this problem yet. And the bigger the problem, the bigger the implication, the more value you can create. So being able to retrospect and see, wow, I actually solved all the problems. It doesn't matter what my title is. I solved this problem. I diagnosed it. I made it happen under budget, you know, faster, whatever that is. So being able to just look back at the things you actually did, irrespective of the frame of the work, if it was consulting or CTO or whatever it is, maybe you're even a junior, just And one of the ways to think about it is you do this experience audit. If you talk to a company right now that's bringing up the same problem, what kind of confidence do you think you would have? You'd probably just muster a lot of confidence. You're like, I know exactly the problem. You're probably having this issue with the servers. You're probably having this security thing. You're probably wasting money on these kind of charges or these kind of costs. You're probably wasting time. You probably don't understand what's going on here. You're probably missing analytics. Whatever it is, you'll have a lot of confidence because it's a terrain you've been in before. You know the space. So being able to retrospect and decouple your experience from the title and just look at it as anecdotal or a list of anecdotes and not just the wrapper, which happened to be your title in the company.
Yeah, each of these is stories in its own right. I love having a little evidence folder. And I look at my evidence folder a few times a year on a rainy day just to make sure. And often after that exercise, I remember who the heck I am, and then I can go on with my life and my day. Let's talk about another one that we see a lot, which is worrying alone. Why does isolation make some of these credibility fears even worse?
I think until you have clients, there's like anxiety and a question, can you even do this? Right, because it's not real yet. It's just like made up in your mind. We have about 300 people in our program and all of them had that coming in, right? They didn't have a client and now they have a client. Even then they still have a fear because they think that the next interview, the next client prospect, whatever it is, they're going to ask about, you know, something related to resume, which again, just doesn't happen or so rarely happens. It just doesn't matter. And you don't see other people going through the same thing. I think generally fears grow when you're by yourself, right? And they pacify when you're in the group. And until that evidence piles up, it's easier to look at other people's evidence. Like, oh, he also quit his job, or he also has a job and took him 3 months to get a client. And now he has a client. And oh, wow, now he has two clients and now he has three. So you get to borrow from people's progress and you can easily apply it to you. But when you're by yourself, there's no mirror, there's no pictures, you don't even know if you're in a museum, then it just grows because there's no feedback loop. Using other people's feedback loop really pacifies it and gives you confidence, especially if you see how similar you are to them in background, in milestones, in values, and so on.
Yeah, it's neat to see. And we have a few examples. Of course, there's the big revenue examples, but also the like ghosted by the client for 6 months, 7 months, and then all of a sudden closed a bunch in 1 week. Yeah. And, you know, so there's all those kind of hero stories. And, you know, that goes into my CTOX evidence folder of like, hey, here are the stories of people just like you who went through some of these same challenges. Here's what they did. Here's what you can do too. And they work through it. So we've been talking about credibility. We've been talking about a little validation, a little peer validation. How can values alignment guide your next chapter?
We think it's very important because one of the freedoms we talk about is freedom of relationship, which being able to choose which humans you're spending time with, right? In a room or in a Zoom, whatever that is. I'll give you a real example. We had a CTO that joined us maybe 2-3 months ago now. And in the very first session with us, he asked me, Lior, I'm not sure, Jesus is very important to me. My religion is very important to me. And I'm not sure what to do because normally, historically, he hid it. He never talked about it. He never put it on anything. Didn't wear, you know, wear his cross under his shirt, whatever it is. And he asked me what I think about it. I'm like, you should make it as front and center as you possibly can. And the meaning, call yourself the kingdom CTO. Like literally. Why? Because you want people to buy you. You don't want people to not buy you. You're going to work with them for a long time, hopefully. And think about the CEO that says yes to that. Like, how much aligned are you on values, on decision-making, on way of life, on all sorts of things that come up when you interact with another person? And same thing, really, for anything that you are. If something is important to you, whatever it is, in his case, it was his faith. If something is important, whatever it is, make it front center because you will attract the people that are also valuing that. And in the context of you building a book of business, again, most people satisfy their income in like 4 to 6 clients, If you want to hit more, maybe 7, 10, 12, but we're not talking about 50 clients. And isn't it nice to have a week where all of your clients are aligned with your values and you didn't have to hide anything or be ashamed of anything? And then having them make a remark that you're like, oh, I miss Judd, I should really leave. In a job, that's a big problem, right? Because then you go into a company and then you realize, whoa, we're completely not aligned. But if you lose the job, you lose 100% of your income. In the fractional CTO realm, if your book of business is built on 5 clients, for example, you lose one, that's 20% of your income, way more recoverable. But if you do it right, you can make sure that you attract it. It's like a dog whistle. The words you use are going to attract the people that also value those words. And that's a great way for you to try to attract your first client. And then, of course, client brings another client, brings another client, and your experience starts creating gravity by itself.
Yeah. Contorting and compromising your values, it has a tax. There's a cognitive load to it. There's an energetic load to it. And if resentment comes from that, that can be corrosive. So, you know, one of my favorite phrases to install and instill in our CTOXs is thank you for showing me we're not a fit. Thank you. And yeah. Because there is a genuine gift that you're receiving when you're doing your discovery and you're asking questions and you realize, oh, this person's a jerk or this person doesn't value the same things that are very important to me. Thank you. Thank you for showing me that now.
Yeah, we did a whole session for our CTOs on red flags, right? Exactly for that. Because there's a lot of little tiny red flags that certainly I noticed over time. And now our CTOs are embellishing that and we're learning even more kinds of red flags. But you want it. I mean, that's the big opportunity of this profession. Even if you continue being a W-2 and you're using fractional CTO for side income, right, which we have some people doing that, you get the freedom of choice. You get to choose your clients. So choose clients that you love. Don't just choose clients that you can serve. Maybe at the beginning, you'll want to choose them because you can serve, because you want that cash, you want that energy built up. But once you have some flexibility, you really want to focus on a great time and really great alignment in your life.
So as we're recording this, it's the very last week of the year. What is one action that those listening can take this week to build credibility in their new chapter?
Create a win. So I would say there's a couple of things. First of all, even when people have a job, unless they have such a restrictive employment agreement, which most people don't, but give value. Post on LinkedIn, send an email, give value. And right now in the AI space, it's so easy. Just take a story that you solve, some kind of problem that you have. It's probably ubiquitous to you. You probably don't recognize it's a big deal, but the reality it is. And so a way to think about it is like an expensive problem you solved or a cool problem you solved as the adjective. And write about it. So other people that are having the problem right now can look at it and say, oh, this helped me. So give value. You can give value with content, give value with email. One of the recommendations we gave our CTOs this week is to send an email, like an end of year email of my favorite tools, right? From the year, from the past few months, whatever it is. It's so easy and it creates a lot of value. And that's really what credibility is. People find you credible when you solve their problem. And part of solving their problem is also making them think of something in any way. Maybe you're listening to this recording or this live right now and you think, oh, I thought about something new that's interesting to me. So we got a little bit, Marisa and I got a little bit of a plus one in our credibility with you. And the more we do that, the more we're credible with you and the more you will eventually want to engage and look at more stuff we do. So give value. You can choose your channel. Do it in an in-person meetup, New Year's Eve, whatever it is, a LinkedIn post, email, only to your friends, to strangers, doesn't really matter. But find a way to give value and go and do it.
I love that. If this episode helped you rethink credibility and transitions, share it with someone who's considering leaving a full-time role and remind them they're not losing credibility, they're reclaiming it. Lior, thank you as always for this fabulous conversation.
I'll see you next time.
See you then.
That wraps up another episode of the CTOX podcast. We hope today's conversation gave you the tools and inspiration to advance your journey as a fractional CTO.
And don't forget, if you want more in-depth support or to connect with our community of fellow fractional CTOs, visit us at ctox.com.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the CTOX podcast.